Yeah, what's up? I've done this 900 times, so I'm just fucking wailing this out. This is the deal. January 9th on Comedy Central, my one-hour special, Robert Kelly, live at the Village Underground, premieres. I need you to check it out, TiVo it, watch it, tell everybody you know. And that night, the same night, you can own it for $5 at robertkellylive.com. You can pre-order your unedited version with a bunch of extras right there at robertkellylive.com. And it's $5, or you can pay a little more. That's your option. So make sure you go there, Comedy Central, January 9th. Check it out, spread the word, and then go to robertkellylive.com right after and buy it. I really appreciate you guys. You guys are the best fans in the fucking world. Thanks for listening to the podcast, and thanks for supporting my live comedy. Goodbye, dude. Go to the website, dude. $5, dude.
You're listening to Band Geek with Richie Castellano on the Riotcast Network. Riotcast.com.
What's up, guys? Richie here. This is episode 31, which is the part two of our Bobby Rondinelli podcast. If you don't know who Bobby Rondinelli is, go back and listen to part one, but I'll also give you a quick recap. Bobby is one of my favorite drummers. He's a legendary hard rock and metal drummer, and when you hear him play, you'll understand why. Bobby was in Rainbow, he was in Black Sabbath, and I met him in Blue Oyster Cult, and now he's also touring with Leslie West, formerly of Mountain, and Axel Rudi Pell, who's a phenomenal, I think he's German, with a name like Axel, I guess he's German, heavy metal guitar player. I actually saw that band. I think they played Hellfest with Blue Oyster Cult, and I got to watch their set, and he was awesome, and their music is awesome. So check that out. Actually, Bobby's got a tour coming up with them, according to the website. If you want to check out the tour dates, that's axel-rudi-pell.de. So they're doing a German tour starting on the 19th of September. So if you're in Germany, I know we have listeners all over the world, so please check out Bobby and check out one of these tour dates. It's an awesome band, and Bobby is totally worth seeing live. He kills, and he killed in this episode, too. It was awesome. We end up with one of my favorite songs. I don't want to spoil it, so you have to get to the end of the episode, but we start off with one of the coolest segments that was actually developed by Danny Miranda called Food Drumming, and that's something special we do with Italian Long Island drummers. So that's how we start this episode. Before we get started, though, I want to take care of some business. I got some Blue Oyster Cult dates coming up. On the 16th of January, we'll be in Milwaukee, Wisconsin at the Potawatomi Casino. I think I said that right. In the Northern Lights Theater. Then on the 17th, we'll be in Everett, Washington at the historic Everett Theater. Then, this is actually cool because it ties into this episode, we'll be playing at the NAMM show for a PV's anniversary concert. That's on the Thursday, that's January 22nd in the Hilton. I believe we start at 7 o'clock. Maybe PV will post that stuff on their website. But yes, that's Blue Oyster Cult, but with Bobby Rondinelli on drums and Rudy Sarzo on bass. I think I did one gig with them or two gigs with them with that configuration. So if you've missed that configuration when we did it, this is a great chance to see it, and that's going to be at the Anaheim Hilton in California during the NAMM show convention. Also, we have some really cool stuff coming up next month in February. We're playing the Rock Legends Cruise 3, which goes from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, to Nassau in the Bahamas. And that's going to be awesome, and it's always a good time. And I know a lot of our listeners already have booked their cabins for that. Okay, so those are the dates. One more thing. Everybody who's been going to do the Amazon link, especially during your Christmas shopping, that was so awesome and totally helpful. Thank you so much for the support. If you want to support the show, go to www.riotcast.com/bandgeek. And at the top of the page is an Amazon banner. You click on that, and it takes you to your regular Amazon website. Except now, when you check out, a small percentage of your purchase goes towards supporting the show, and it doesn't cost you anything. So we appreciate you doing that. Thank you very much. Okay, on with the show. We left off last time. We were about to go into food drumming. So without further ado, here is Food Drumming with Bobby Rondinelli. We'll be right back.
So, Danny has this thing called food drumming.
I don't hear you.
Are your headphones on?
Yeah. Oh.
It's so good that you can play bass.
I said, you know what? This time is going to make it into the show because I've said this joke 3 times. I had to cut it out for various reasons. I was talking to, I think I was talking to you or I was talking to John, and we were talking about Danny and how great you are. You're great.
Oh, thank you.
I said, but it's a good thing he plays bass so well, or else he'd just be a regular crazy person.
He'd be an irregular crazy person. There's nothing regular about him.
So here's what's going to happen. We're going to do it like this. You're going to name the food, and you have to – first, we'd like you to explain what the food is to people, because Danny might not know what all these foods are, as we've learned from the past. So if he says, for example, pasta fazool, you're going to say, pasta fazool is blah, 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 and then we'd like you to play it on the drums.
Oh, I thought they were filled, like cannoli, provolone. So
here we go. So what is the first fill in food drumming?
Cannoli provolone.
So please explain what that is.
Cannoli is an Italian pastry.
Okay.
It's about 4 feet away from us is what it is.
Provolone is a cheese, like how Danny smells.
Okay. And please play. And what was the fill again?
Cannoli, provolone.
Cannoli, provolone. That's not a good cannoli provolone, is it? No.
You want to do another one?
Yeah.
So here we go.
Wait, let me think of another one. Okay, cannoli. What is it again, Danny?
Cannoli, provolone.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's the quintessential cannoli.
Because you see, these drum fills that may sound familiar to me, you don't realize that you're hearing Italian pastries and cheeses throughout the history of rock and roll. Ravioli.
Okay, pick another one.
Ravioli.
Okay, what is ravioli if people don't know?
Ravioli is a wonderful...
Oh, it's great. It's wonderful.
Pasta filled with... Ragout and a little mozzarella, maybe, and some spices.
Okay. Or it could be filled with butternut squash.
If you're gay.
Oh, I saw that coming a mile away.
Butternut squash ravioli.
It to him.
Your father is rolling in his grave. He's such a nice man.
Okay, so what's the fill?
Sometimes a sun-dried tomato ravioli, too.
All right, what's the fill, jerk?
Ravioli.
There you go. Okay, you got to give some better ones. That was a shitty one.
No, more like a funkier beat, you know, mozzarella.
You're doing the same fail all over again.
Yeah, right.
Well,
he's using the same syllables with different words.
He's out of his mind.
Here we go.
What are we doing?
I'm out of pastries.
Broccoli rabe. So what is broccoli rabe?
Broccoli rabe is a vegetable that they make into a soup. Ish kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Okay, so let's see the broccoli rabe.
I think Carmine Appice invented the broccoli rabe and many other Italian food delights.
Right. That's exactly it. Whose phone is that? Okay.
Rob DiMartino, I'm doing broccoli rabes right now.
Robbie.
Rob DiMartino.
I'm with Richie Castellano doing a podcast, and you're on it. Bye.
What about the... Okay, now, here's one. This is one that Danny has failed in the past. What is pasta fazool?
Pasta fazool is the reason I know Danny isn't Italian. Because he didn't know what it was. Eric Bloom, a very nice Jewish boy, knew what it was. Danny Miranda lost a vowel on this one. I actually called his mother.
She was almost in tears, saying, "It's not really his fault. I didn't make it." I go, "Mrs. Miranda, you're not going to, it's his fault. You can't take the brunt for this one."
So, can you please play us Pasta Fazul?
Pasta Fazul. That's a little pasta fazool.
That's a little matzo ball in there too.
Okay, so did you have any better ones? Because you said you had this. I
had a couple, and you said they were all the same.
Well, they were the same. They were the same rhythm.
The mozzarella.
He can't help it. All those Italian words have all those vowels in them.
Okay, so now we have to do one where we do. Okay, what's another one? What's another? We have to think of. Oh, you had one with the manigot.
They're all said three syllables.
You deflated it.
Manigot, salami.
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 Okay.
There's a different accent in salami.
Ah, this is a nice thing, a little Parmigiano Reggiano.
Okay. What was that again?
Parmigiano Reggiano.
What is that?
It's the cheese.
What's Parmigiano Reggiano?
That's not my job.
It's a
cheese. It's a freaking cheese.
The best cheese ever.
Because
you could move that one. There's not many Italian foods where you can move the one like that.
That's
right. Parmigiano Reggiano.
That's right.
You could John McLaughlin that.
So, okay. So just do me a favor and say, I'm Bobby Rondinelli and this is Food Drumming.
I'm Bobby Rondinelli. This is Food Drumming. It's fucking out of control.
Okay. I got enough.
Should I stop the camera?
Yeah, I want to talk about something really quick. You wrote a book about, because I was just noticing that your double bass drum. Can you tell people about that, the book that you wrote?
I wrote a book on double bass drumming, me and a guy named Michael Lorne.
And what's it called?
The Encyclopedia of Double Bass Drumming, and Modern Drummer Magazine is the publisher, and Hal Leonard is the distributor.
And what level of student do you think should listen?
It's from beginning to very advanced.
Really?
Yeah.
So if you just want to get into double bass drum playing, you can pick this up and that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
It takes you all the way up.
When did you start double bass drumming? Was that like immediately or when like the late 60s things started happening? Or?
I think I started playing double bass when I was about 14 or 15.
Wow. Now, did you have two bass drums or did you get a pedal?
They didn't have double pedals back then. You had to have two. You had to have two bass drums.
Wow.
In fact, the only real new addition to the drum set, really, in the last 60 years, to me, is the double pedal. You know what I mean? Because it was always, if you wanted to play double bass, you had to have two bass drums.
When did the double pedal come around?
Probably sometime in the 80s, maybe late 70s.
Revolutionary.
Yeah, it definitely changed everything.
So right now you're playing on John's drums because this is John's studio and it would have been a huge pain in the ass to take all the drums off and re-mic them up. So that's cool. But when you play a gig, what's your rig?
I use Ludwig drums. I use a 26-inch bass drum, a 14-inch tom, 16, and an 18-inch floor tom. I use Paiste cymbals. These are my cymbals. Paiste giant beats, Ludwig snare. This is an old 70s Ludwig 402. My favorite snare drum in the world. And I got 70 snare drums, and this is...
You have 70 snare drums?
Yeah, it's one of the best.
7-0.
7-0.
I would love to stab three or four of them.
Oh,
I would.
It's not going to happen.
Well,
I have stabbed Danny's bass guitars, by the way.
My wife...
Can we hear that story? That's a great story.
All right, go ahead. Tell a story, Danny.
Well, the stabbing came out... Actually, the knife came out earlier on. I had a Gibson Thunderbird bass, which is really cool bass. And I had that lightning bolt strap like Ace Frehley used to have. And Bobby was really nice for a while about it. He said, this bass sounds great, but all I see is this, the strap. And then after a while, he took out his wallet. He said, "How much did you pay for the strap?" And I told him, "If I pay you now, can I slice it? Can I step?" He just wanted to cut the strap. He couldn't stand it. So then a couple years ago, I was playing a gig, and he shows up. While I'm playing, he comes over. He goes, come here. The bass was Fiesta Red. Mm-hmm. I go, what color is that bass? I said, it's Fiesta Red. He goes, oh, maybe you didn't hear me. I'm going to ask you again. What color is that bass? I said, well, it's kind of like an orangey salmon. I'm going to ask you one last time. What color? I said, okay, it's pink. I know what he was thinking. And at the end of the night, he goes, you know, I got to admit, the bass sounds really good. May I stab it? So he took his knife out, and there's three little indentations on the back of the bass, and there's one on this bass here.
Knife actually stayed in it.
It's a term of endearment.
Like,
yeah.
You know, when we went to Germany.
May I stab it?
Germany is when it was all over for me. That was my that was like my bar mitzvah.
You were changed forever.
When I went to Germany with you guys, but one thing is on the bus, you were watching these Cold Steel videos.
Oh, yeah.
And that changed. That was a life changing event for me because that got me into swords and knives and stuff. And Bobby was just watching.
Thanks, Bobby.
And my poor wife has had to deal with this weird.
Oh look, another sword.
My wife.
But
says,
thank you for giving me options to buy him Christmas presents every year. Because I mean, he can always have another sword, right?
You can't have too many swords.
You can't have too many swords.
What if someone tries to break into your house?
And if a burglar's coming into your house, you're not going for the strat.
No. No.
So Bobby got me into this whole like sword collecting thing, and it was just these videos of these really huge guys with samurai swords running towards pig carcasses and chopping them in half. Right? That was or a rack of ribs.
They were already dead. Yeah.
I said carcasses.
Yeah, right.
So that's one thing. I want to, because I know we're short on time today, but I want to talk about a few more things before we stop. So you're in Rainbow. Right? How long did that go for?
A little over 3 years.
Cool. Any high points in that you'd like to talk about?
You know, getting to play with Rizzy Blackmore was, you know, it was pretty cool because, you know, Deep Purple and Rainbow actually were both bands were one of my favorite bands.
Yeah.
You know, so to actually and take Cozy Powell's place. Cozy was always, you know, I always loved the way Cozy drummed, and I got in the band right after him. So it was a big responsibility, and it was a lot of fun.
So when did Black Sabbath happen?
Black Sabbath happened in the early '90s.
And how did that come about?
Well, I was in a band called Doro, and the tour manager was friends with Iommi. Used to work for Sabbath. You know, and I told him I'd always wanted to be in Sabbath, you know. So I get a call from his name was Robert Gambino. I get a call from him one day, and he goes, Rondinelli, Sabbath needs a drummer. So I says, great, can you call up and put in a good word? No, I can't. If Tony Iommi's missus answers the phone, you'll never have a shot. She hates me. So he gives me the number, and I'm calling Tony Iommi's house cold. You know, so I called up, and his wife answers the phone, his wife at the time, and I said, hi, I'm Bobby, blah, blah, blah. I played with blah, 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 and I hear Sabbath needs a drummer. So she takes down my number, and says, I'll tell Tony, he should be home soon. Like 20 minutes later, Iommi called me, and he said that he had my name on, I was one of the names on his list. Anyway, we talked for 2 hours, and they flew me over, and I got the gig. So
now, it's funny, because... Is that something that you had to like rehearse the phone call like in your head before? Like, what am I going to do? I'm going to call up Tony Iommi's house and say, "Hey," like, do you? Is that something that you're like you freak out about before picking up the phone?
No, I mean, well, I played with Richie Blackmore, so it wasn't like I was
a nobody calling,
just
right.
Calling cold. Like, you know, I'm really good, and you know, I playing with Richie gives you some credibility. And he, you know, when he called me back, it's the first thing he said. He goes, your name is on the short list anyway. We're going to call you. So, nice. And Tony was a really nice guy, easy going, easy to talk to.
Now, that has to be a huge tour, right? Because Sabbath is like...
It was pretty big.
It's one of the biggest metal bands in the world.
Well, we did... one of the runs was 16 weeks in Europe.
Wow.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Now, was that like a bus tour sort of thing, or... I mean, was it, or was it?
Well, we had a bus, but we get hotels every night.
Right. So you did the Cross Purposes album, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And actually, I was lucky enough to do a gig with you and Tony Martin, and mm-hmm. I got to meet him. And he, what a phenomenal singer that guy is!
Yeah, he's good.
So we did some of that, but we didn't do any songs from that album. But we got to play some Sabbath songs.
Yeah, right.
Do you play with any of those guys? And Jeff too, right? The keyboard player, yeah.
Yeah, Jeff was in Sabbath.
What's Jeff's last name again?
Nichols.
Yeah, right. Do you play with those guys a lot? Like when you go over to Europe?
I have, and it's possible to do again in the future, but we haven't in a while.
So was it just for the one tour, or when you were in Sabbath?
Well, I was in Sabbath, and then I got a new manager who got me thrown out because she asked for too much money. And then they got Cozy back, and then halfway through, Cozy didn't really want to do it, and they called me up again. So I did a few tours with Sabbath.
Nice.
But it was a great band. Great band.
That's the top right there. You know, you're playing with the one of the – that's doesn't get bigger than Sabbath in terms of, you know, metal bands. That's it.
Or better.
Yeah. Okay, so – so you were so it's kind of like on and off. You did one tour, then there was a little lapse in the middle, and then there was another tour. So did you? When did you start getting involved with, like, between that and Blue Oyster Cult? Were there any other bands that you played with?
I played with Doro Pesh for a while, bunch of sessions, no real touring projects in that time period, but except for Doro.
Right. So when did BOC happen?
BOC, well, I think Danny, you got me involved in that, right?
Yeah. You subbed once.
Right, I subbed once for John Riley.
Right.
O'Reilly, and then they asked me to join, but I didn't because I was supposed to get back with Sabbath like in a month or two, mm-hmm. and I'm talking to Iommi every day on the phone, and everything's good. And then I find out on MTV that they got Ozzy back and Bill Ward back. And nobody bothers to tell me because I could have been with Blue Oyster Cult months sooner.
Right.
But I turned it down.
They did
and then,
you a favor.
Yeah, come on. And then it's a long
You're
story.
Cracking yourself up here.
No, yeah. I said, you know, in fact, I got Donald. We were playing out on Long Island. I got Donald to come out. He was living in Jersey at the time. Why don't you come out and jam with us? I said, you know what? I says his resume and his track record and reputation speaks for himself. But you know what you need to do? You need to feel it. You need to come out and play with us because you're really going to enjoy playing with him. Because at the end of the day, you know, resumes and all that stuff, that's good. But it's just, you know, I said, you're going to really, really dig when you play with him, especially when you play with the two of us together, you know.
That's a killer. Yeah, that's a, you know, when I got the call to sub for Woody Doing Sound, I went out to a tape store. That's what they had at the time. I put a cassette tape of Blue Oyster Cult's Greatest Hits, and I listened to it. And I said, okay, you know. So a lot of the earlier stuff is kind of lo-fi, you know, when it gets to like Fire of Unknown Origin, the production changes, you know. And I said, okay, the drums are kind of small sounding and, you know, the bass is kind of contained. And I said, I'm trying to get like an idea of the aesthetic of the band. You know what I mean?
How it's wrong were you?
You know, but no, because the drums on the first like three BOC albums are not huge. They're period specific. You know what I mean? They sound like they were recorded when they were recorded. But, so then I was talking to Bill Lotzko, the tour manager, and I said, okay, yeah, I'm ready. I've been listening to BOC songs. I can mix this. He goes, oh, no, forget that. He said, forget about it. He goes, it doesn't sound anything like that anymore. I said, yeah, but they're the same. He goes, yeah, they're the same songs. They're doing the same songs, but they do them totally different. I said, so what am I doing? Like, should I, I'm writing down notes on effects and, you know, delay times and stuff. He goes, oh, no. He goes, big rock show, as big as possible. So then I saw you and Bobby play together, and I said, this is like the heaviest fucking thing I've ever seen. It's just like, you know, there's such weight to every single song. And I love that interpretation. And I liked that we kept some of that in the set. I mean, Jules, when Jules joined, he went back to some of the original Bouchard parts. But we managed to still keep, you know what I mean, a lot of the heaviness. And when I was playing bass originally, I remember you came to see us and you said, you know, you didn't have to transcribe all my mistakes too. It's like I had all these fills that Danny would put in that I thought were part of the song because I learned
and I realized how many of I played was inappropriate.
Well, I learned the BOC stuff off of the Long Day's Night DVD.
Yeah, yeah.
As you should have.
Yeah. So that's how. Yeah.
I mean, they were on their way. I mean, they had some really good rhythm sections throughout the decade before we joined.
Oh yeah.
So they were on their way, but I think there's some, Bobby and I had already played together in a local band anyway, and we really had an instant chemistry, if mm-hmm. I do say so myself, and they allowed us to do that, which was really noble of them because
well,
they could have.
It took a while, but eventually. I mean, they. I can't even say it.
Well, you know, yeah. I see. The thing is, we're not. And then I know a lot of the hardcore fans are sensitive to this. This is not to say anything about the original recordings or the.
No, but you got to grow. The music has to grow.
Yeah, when we did the anniversary show and Joe and Albert played, I got it. I was like, oh, I get it. You know what I mean? Like, this is fucking awesome.
And you know, but also it's keep different. In mind, if they would have remained in the band, they would have evolved. You know, you're listening to recordings that are 30, 40 years old.
Right.
You know, bands like Rush or even like Deep Purple. The same members, the songs still evolve, and you don't say, oh, it doesn't sound like the record.
Yeah, if you listen to the difference between like Hush and Perfect Strangers and the production and the drum sound, it's like it's a different band.
Yeah, but yet it's the same guys.
Same guys.
But if they were new guys, they'd say these guys are not like the originals. They don't get it, you know. And it's unfair in a way. Because you have to allow bands like that to evolve.
Okay, I have to wrap it up. I want to, if someone wants to find out about your gigs or anything like that, Bobby, where should they go?
Just look me up on Facebook.
Cool. So look up Bobby Rondinelli on Facebook and like him and all that stuff. And you play a lot around Long Island, so if people mm-hmm. are in the area, they come see you. And if you want, now here's another thing. Bobby has not only amazing live credits, but he has amazing studio credits. So if you want a real heavy-duty pro drummer on your recordings, hit Bobby up on Facebook, right?
Sure.
You can. I mean, that's the thing. Now with Pro Tools and everything, you can get your favorite drummer or favorite bass player on your tracks, you know, and it's not as hard as you think. So also, if you're a student and you want to get your shit together, go look, hit Bobby up on Facebook again and see where he's teaching. So if he has any openings, of course. I'm saying that so if any crazy people contact you, you can say, no, I'm booked.
No crazy people listen to the show.
If Danny calls me.
Yeah. If you're a crazy person, look up Danny Miranda on Facebook and he'll come to your house. Anyway, so let's bring this home with one song. I'll let you choose. We can either do Crossroads or Going Down. Those are the two I prepared for this.
Going Down.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Key, we're going to do this fucking thing in now.
D?
Oh, okay. Now I got to tune down again. Hold on.
You do?
Well, I like the low D. No. I'm sitting up. Yeah. Can you give me a little bit more bass again now? Because now I'm playing with my fingers. Come on, dude. Thank you. Amory, is he this impatient with everybody?
What?
He
usually just saves it for me. But yeah.
Uh-huh. That's all right. I got it up here. It's storing in the vault.
How long will it take you to put all this together?
Oh, the podcast? It depends. I got to like listen to it and see what everything sounds like. Usually I can do it in a week. And the video is actually the easiest part. It's fun. Mixing, I'm like obsessive and I, you know, listened to everything 1,000 times.
The Bee Gees stuff took a... We did a Bee Gees tune. That took a long time, right?
Yeah, that was very difficult. Oh, wait, I'm not allowed to complain. Andy said I complain too much on the show.
He can't hear you. He's in France.
He's in Germany.
France. Whatever.
He's in France.
Well, that's right. Germany. I'm sure he blends right in there with the folks. The Aryan haircut and whatever else he's got.
But okay. Here is a song that I love. There's a lot of different versions of this. There was a Jeff Beck version, right? Oh, and there's like a an Eric Johnson.
That was the first version that I know that everybody started using.
Yeah.
My favorite version is the Freddie King version. Yeah. But so I'm going to do a little bastardization of all the different versions and also our own version, I guess. Let's just admit, you know what? Here's our own version of Going Down. Everybody cool? All right. Good? Thank you for listening to Band Geek. I'd like to thank our special guest, Bobby Rondinelli.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you to Danny for joining us. Danny Miranda on bass. My wife, Anne Marie, helping us out today. I'm Richie Castellano. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Thanks, Rich.
Thank you so much.
Man. All right. Oh, that was. And that's the name of that tune.